Welcome into the Rocky Top Rewind, everybody. Every 8 o'clock Sunday evenings here on the VolQuest YouTube channel. I'm Eric Kane. That man is Brent Hubbs. And we got a lot to get into here today, recapping everything that was a 71-0 win over Kent State. We'll recap that. Look at the highs. There wasn't any lows in that football game. We'll look ahead to Oklahoma coming up this week in the start of SEC play. With Teddy Lehman, former linebacker, really good one for the Sooners, teammate of Josh Heupel, and a current color analyst for the Sooners Radio Network. That's coming up about 8:20. Austin Price will join the show coming up in about 40 minutes, 8:40, bottom of the hour, and we'll get you set for a big week for Tennessee football. All that right here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Do want to give a shout-out to our friends, proud sponsors of this show. That is the Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. As TN Trial Lawyers specialize in criminal offense such as personal injury, divorce, custody, car wrecks, whatever the case may be. If you have a need, pick up the phone today for a free consultation. Call my friends at Spivey King and Spivey LLP over at 423-245-4185. That is a free consultation. You can also visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers. Brent Hubbs, we talked about on the post-game podcast last night. It was what we think is a really good football team against what we know a really bad football team. Didn't learn an awful lot, but Tennessee was mature. Tennessee handled business, and Tennessee broke some records in the process, 71-0 over Kent State.
Yeah, that's arguably the greatest mismatch I've ever seen in Neyland Stadium for a Tennessee game. I think the maturity is something that you have to take note of and you have to be impressed with, because Tennessee did do what they were supposed to do right out of the gate. And listen, they could have limped and they could have been as sloppy could be, Eric, and still win that football game. But the reality is they weren't sloppy. They didn't turn the football over. They didn't jump off sides. They didn't have a bunch of false starts. They didn't have a bunch of drop passes. They had somewhat of an edge about them against an opponent that, quite frankly, I think would have been very hard to get an edge to play for. I mean, they watched tape, and, I mean, multiple people talked about, everyone recognized just how overmatched Kent State was going to be in this game and how poorly they played. So give Tennessee a lot of credit for that. But I wrote this in the 10 things. I mean, holistically, I don't know that we learned a ton about Tennessee that we didn't already know. Individually, I think we learned some things about some guys, some young guys, which I think is important. And I mentioned this on the podcast, and you talked about it on the podcast afterwards. To get that many snaps the first three games of the season coming out of fall camp is a real blessing. It's something that doesn't happen all the time. And I think Tennessee's taken full advantage of it with the opportunities by getting those guys on the field. And I think some of those young guys have taken full advantage of the opportunity with the snaps that have been in front of them. Now they've got to settle in. Probably, a lot of those guys aren't going to play for a while. And unless Tennessee's just really, really good and blowing out a bunch of people, or you have a rash of injuries. But to get those guys that many reps this early in the season, those young guys, I think is really important. I mean, to get Gage Ginther all the reps he got last night, Satterwhite, Bennett Warren, that's only going to help those guys through the rest of this season and obviously building for 25.
Yeah, we talked about William Satterwhite, who looks like he's going to be the backup center and the center of the future for Tennessee. He's gotten a lot of snaps in three games. Edrees Farouk on the defensive side of the football. Maybe he can help Tennessee in the defensive backfield, not just in blowouts, but as part of the regular rotation as the year goes along. I think this first couple of weeks has been big for him. And it's never a bad thing when you're able to empty the bench and truly empty the bench in two out of the first three games and pretty much play everybody you took to Charlotte as well. I think a lot of the storylines coming out of last night is scoring records, modern era records broken, all that. But let's discuss defense first. Again, the challenge is going to get that much greater this week on the road, hostile environment, Oklahoma, start of SEC play. We know what's down the road, but it's been four straight games dating back to last year that Tennessee has not allowed an offensive touchdown. You got the Citrus Bowl victory over Iowa. You've got UTC, NC State, and then Kent State. 16 straight quarters. Brent, you gave us a stat last night. That's the longest since 1938 to 1939. It's pretty impressive what Tennessee's doing here on the defensive end. And they're playing well at all three levels. They're pressuring the quarterback, linebackers flying around, defense in two out of the three games. The secondary has not been tested, but done everything that they're supposed to. This defense for Tim Banks looking really good, and the depth and the quality of players on that side of the football has been a lot different from what we've seen the past couple of years.
Yeah, I'm going to steal this from someone posted on the General's Quarters last night, and I started diving into it. I actually used it in my 10 things piece today. That's about as boring of a defensive dominating performance as you've seen.
Yeah,
I mean, there was no defining play, defining moment. I mean, you could argue the best defensive play was Jermaud McCoy playing a slant absolutely perfectly, which Tennessee fans have been clamoring for forever. But otherwise, it was just kind of a ho-hum shutout. And yeah. I don't know if that's really what you call those, Eric, but I mean, they didn't have a sack. They only had two tackles for loss. They did get the safety, but they didn't do anything. It was just a bad snap there. But they didn't force a turnover. I mean, it was just kind of a – I mean, it tells you how overmatched Kent State was. But I don't think it says that Tennessee played poorly either on defense. It's a credit to what this roster has built, and the depth that they have at all three levels when you look at it. I mean, you looked out there at linebacker at one point. They got T. Lander and Peely on the field at the same time. And then the next time you got Carter and Caleb Perry's out there. And then Jalen Smith's playing out there. And then Spillman gets out there. I mean, they can mix and match. Spillman not necessarily right now, but they can mix and match with those other guys pretty well. They just have a lot of options and a lot of bodies to play with on that side of the ball. And that's a credit to the development. It's a credit to their recruiting. And Eric, it's a credit also to some guys staying around that could have left, and they're opting in to use in their COVID year. And that's why Tennessee got a bunch of grown men playing on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah. There's a couple of guys on that. I mean, Amari Thomas comes to mind. He could be a 2-year NFL veteran right now. You know, he's one of them. Michael brings up a good point. I know you've discussed this. You talked about it going into the game and, last night and today leaving the game. I mean, it's pretty evident last week Tennessee was a very mature football team. Some of those guys who are grown men electing to stay, leadership in that locker room. Now, this team has faced a little adversity. This team's going to face some adversity along the way. I'd like to see how it responds to that. But it seems like, as Michael points out, this is a very mature football team. They certainly handled last week in the football game yesterday the right way.
Well, I think you got quality leadership on both sides. I mean, Dylan Sampson is a really good football player. And someone had mentioned, I think Donovan mentioned in the chat as well, about him playing as well as anybody in the country, and he's playing really well. He is a really good leader.
Yeah.
And it's not just, it's one thing for guys to be vocal, right? I mean, you've seen all those guys, Eric, that are vocal guys and everything. And everybody goes, okay, yeah, let's let him get his rah-rah out of here. And then we'll go, whatever. When he talks, I mean, he garners attention. It's not just a rah-rah for the sake of rah-rah or getting vocal for just the sake of saying, hey, I'm the guy in the middle of the huddle and I'm going to do this. I mean, he carries a lot of weight with his team. I think Cooper Mays is a good leader. I think the chemistry in that room on the offensive line is better than it's been. I think Lance Hurd has slid in and been a really good personality fit for them. We've talked about the linebackers and Keenan Peely and what he's meant there. You got a bunch of grown men who are just trying to make plays on the defensive front. But I think the culture in that room is good. So, yeah, I mean, right now it's great. They haven't had any adversity. Everybody's getting to play. Everybody's making plays. Life's good, and you're rolling right along. We'll see how they handle adversity. But I think that there's a lot of confidence in both sides of the ball feeding off each other and playing, quote, complementary football. There's a ton of confidence in Nico and what he can do. So they're in a great spot right now. And they really are. There's almost too good of a spot, right? You're kind of like, wait a minute, what's going on here? But I mean, it's one of those deals where everything seems to be aligning very, very well for Tennessee as they get ready to go to Norman, Oklahoma. The only downside probably to this is because Tennessee's played so well, Eric, they've gone from being the hunter to the hunted. I mean, they're going to be favored on the road. They're going to be the pick of everybody this week across the country. And that's probably a little bit of a challenge for Josh Heupel and his team going on the road to make sure you're laser sharp when everybody's picking you to win and handle business based on where Oklahoma's at. But again, if that's what you're having to deal with, that's not a bad thing to deal with because we've seen this program get on airplanes with no shot to go beat who they're going to play, and that's certainly not the case.
Yep, means you're doing something right. Those early lines, early in the offseason, like back in May, had, you know, Tennessee as a touchdown, essentially underdog in this game. And I think before kickoff last week, before week two, Tennessee was a 2.5-point underdog. Heading into kickoff this past weekend, Tennessee was a 2.5-point favorite. And now Tennessee sits, at the time of this recording over at FanDuel, a 7.5-point favorite. So a touchdown and then some with a total of 58.
I don't know that it's going to go down. Yeah. I mean, as the week goes along, I don't know that it's going to move a ton, you know, and get back closer to a pick'em game. I don't think it's going to go to double digits, but I think everybody's going to be laying heavy on Tennessee, given what they've done and given where Oklahoma, you know, has had. I mean, they had a hard time putting Tulane away, and they struggled against Houston. Now, they're going to play better. I mean, I think they'll play their best ball this week, so Tennessee's got to be ready to go.
Let me ask you this. I mean, when everything's going right, when you're playing the quality opponent that you played in Kent State, when you win in 71-0, you try to poke holes in things and try to find something to debate a little bit. And, you know, one of the things I was talking about on some shows I've done since kickoff is, man, I am so impressed. I think everybody is with what Deshaun Bishop's doing. He just gets opportunities and he takes advantage of it. Cam Seldon is a good football player. I think he's going to be good in this offense. It's not his fault that he's been banged up some. Having said that, it's not Deshaun Bishop's fault that he's taken off, you know, taken off and that as well. When Cam Seldon is healthy, I still think Deshaun Bishop right now deserves a little piece of the pie there in the backfield. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, he's my number two running back going into Norman, Oklahoma, and he'd be my number two running back going to Fayetteville, Arkansas. That doesn't mean you don't play Cam Seldon. Mm-hmm. I think he gets those opportunities and should get chances to carry the ball. But the thing about Deshaun Bishop is every time Deshaun Bishop has gotten an opportunity, he's over the course of the last 6 months, 7 months, he has made the most of that opportunity. All the carries he got in spring practice made him a better football player. It did. It helped him mature because he couldn't take a day off in spring because he was, you know, they weren't running Dylan Sampson. He was running back one. You got to go show yourself. He took confidence from that, had a really good summer. And then he was in a situation where he was running back number one in fall camp. And again, he took full advantage of that. And I think it's a great story because it's two-sided. He bet on himself to come to Tennessee.
Yes, he did.
Could have gone other places, but he bet on himself that he was good enough to play in this league. And a year after he's been at Tennessee, after spring practice, Josh Heupel in the Tennessee program bet on Deshaun Bishop. Mm-hmm. Because they could have went to the portal, disrupted the chemistry in that room, brought in a guy for protection because you didn't know if Cam Seldon was going to be healthy. You didn't know where Peyton Lewis was going to be. And Tennessee said, no, we're going to bet on Deshaun Bishop. And Deshaun Bishop has answered the bell for himself and has answered the bell for Tennessee. I think it's a great story. And, you know, I think with each week, he's getting more comfortable in this offense and getting better. He's such a patient runner. He falls forward. He has good vision. He has great instincts as a running back. Does he have elite breakaway speed? I mean, all those things I get, they're still out there. The guy just knows how to carry the, he just knows how to carry the rock and knows how to play the running back position. So is he going to be an all world player at Tennessee? I don't think so, but can you turn and give it to him and close out football games and get meaningful yards at any point in time in the game with him in there? And you have no hesitation about rotating him in? Based on what I've seen for three games, absolutely.
Yeah, I think his speed is – I mean, you and I both have watched him play 4 years of high school football. He's a local kid, so, I mean, I knew kind of his arsenal. I think his speed this year has kind of been – he was never slow, but – and it's Kent State, I recognize that, and a couple of those against NC State, but, like, his – you know, speed in the open field's been a little bit better than I thought, and I know that he's not this good of a back, so don't hear me wrong, but – I like a good comp for me is kind of with the vision and the patience, Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell would get that football and he'd wait, he'd look, he'd decide, then he'd hit it. And I see that kind of with Deshaun as well, and he's doing that at a really, really good, you know, clip so far.
Well,
so.
I think that's what Cam Seldon has to continue to learn. And that's just his lack of, I mean, remember Cam Seldon was a high school wide receiver for a good bit. So I think that's an adjustment period back to him is, when to wait and when to go and those types of things. I think Dylan Sampson is exceptional and has been for the better part of 2 years now at being very patient, but then at the same time too, being decisive, right? I mean, wait on it, feel the crease and go. And I think DeShawn Bishop has gotten much better at that as well, which I think is important when you talk about the zone blocking stuff that Tennessee does. When you got a pulling guard, you can't get out in front of that guy. You got to let that set itself up. And Tennessee, to this point against the competition they played, has been very patient back there, and they've been rewarded for it with a lot of 10 and 15 yard runs. They may not, I mean, I know they had a 53 yarder last night. They may not have the 70 yard run this year that Jalen Wright had, but man, right now they are getting chunks. It's 10, 15 yards on a pretty regular basis for this run game.
Yeah, last night's 17 plays on the ground that exceeded 10 plus yards. That is the definition of getting it in chunks.
And it's also the definition of a woeful defense that you're playing. Bad defense. But again, you play the schedule that's in front of you. That's the team that's here. You were mature. You took what you could get. Right. You didn't try to do more than what was blocked up for, and you maximized what you could do. And that's, again, the sign of a mature football team that played within themselves. Nobody tried to make hero plays last night, which is easy to do in a game like that. Right. Try to get a highlight play, a Sports Center highlight. And it was just, we're going to be very businesslike in our approach and we're going to go get it. Now, the question is going to be, and I know we got to get to a break here so we can hit this one a little bit later. Somebody asked earlier in the chat, you may have started, about playing these games and what's the future of playing these games. I think that's a really fascinating discussion that we can get into later tonight in this show or on a podcast this week as well, as to kind of what direction college football scheduling is going to go at the Power 5 level as we get further immersed into a 12-team playoff.
Yep, it's a great topic of conversation, especially coming off a game that Tennessee just had with Kent State. We'll hit that later on. We'll answer more of your questions. We've got coming up next Teddy Lehman, former Oklahoma linebacker, current analyst for the Oklahoma Sooners Radio Network, 2000 BCS national champion. His resume is long and lengthy. We'll get his thoughts on Oklahoma, Josh Heupel, and so much more when we return right here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Do want to give a shout out to our sponsors. That is Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers, they specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury, DUI, assault, divorce, custody, alimony, personal wrecks, or personal injuries such as car wrecks or whatnot. 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout the federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. The firm has got a vast amount of trial experience. Practice has been in place for 43 years. This specific partnership since 2012, while also having partners who are energized and ready for today's legal demands. They practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas, but they can help you wherever you are. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP, they can help you. Again, that phone number is up on the screen right now. A free consultation. Give Spivey King and Spivey LLP a call today at 423-245-4185 or go online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey, if you got a problem, let them find a solution for you at his TN Trial Lawyers. Welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind, presented as always by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Tennessee, a 71-0 winner over Kent State, but the challenge, it gets pretty steep here this week. Opening SEC play on the road in Norman, Oklahoma. It's a big game for a number of reasons. So to tell us all about that from an Oklahoma perspective, let's bring in a guy that knows a whole lot about football. His name is Teddy Lehman, former Alabama linebacker and a current analyst for the Sooners Radio Network, does a number of different things. Teddy, appreciate the time, man. How you doing? I think you got your mic muted on your end. There we go.
You're good, guys, man. I'm looking forward to this week. It's going to be fun.
Teddy, you look like you still got a few snaps in you. Heupel still says he can throw it around pretty good. What about you? You got a few left in you?
I may give you one goal line snap. That's about it. I ain't going to be able to run around the field at all, though.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show tonight and give some thoughts from the OU perspective. It's overreaction Sunday and Monday for everybody in college football, as it is each week. 3 weeks into this thing, where do you see OU right now, Oklahoma? What do you like about where they are? Where have you seen them grow and improve? What's kind of your big picture view of them 3 weeks into the season?
Well, there's a lot of good. There's a lot of bad. You know, our defense is performing really well. We're experienced at all three levels. You know, we've got some good senior leadership guys that have been in this system, and it shows. You know, we're led by those guys. They're making a ton of plays for us. Billy Bowman on the back end, Danny Stutzman at backer, Ethan Downs, Dejon Terry, who I know you guys are familiar with. You know, there's been a lot of playmakers, and for the first time in a long time, we're deep on the defensive side. Really like the linebacker room. You know, Stutzman will play both the Mike and Will spot, and we'll rotate different guys that are out there on the field with him. You know, we got several edge guys. Ethan Downs is a senior, has been a 3-year starter for us. You know, R. Mason Thomas just had a big game, couple of sacks. And, you know, we've got some youth there. Had a transfer, Caden Woolard, come in. Trace Ford, who transferred from Oklahoma State a couple of years ago. We got good, solid depth, really, at all three levels. And they know the scheme. They know the defense. You know, the first year, it was a fire drill. Every single game, every snap, just trying to get lined up right. And last year, it got better. And, you know, there was some really big improvement throughout the season. And I would say, you know, we lost, what, 3 games last year, and I'd say the defense played good enough to win the football game in all 3 of those, in the games that we lost. So far, knock on wood, we've been pretty healthy on the defensive side. Kendall Dolby, our cheetah, or our nickel, missed this last game against Tulane. I really don't know what the prognosis is for him, if he's expected to be back, you know, this week against Tennessee or not. We'll hear from Head Coach Brent Venables tomorrow night. He has his coach's show, and I'll be there on that with him, and I'm sure he'll let us know what Kendall Dolby's, what the forecast is for him this week. So far the defense has been really good. Very few mental mistakes. We tackle pretty good as a team. We're massively improved on the interior defensive line than we've been in a long time. Offensively, it's a different story.
I was going to say, you know, Donovan chimes in here, and he says you do a great job with the Oklahoma breakdown. Besides the line of scrimmage, which you just mentioned about an improved defensive front and some questions offensively, besides that line of scrimmage, what's another big matchup and key to this football game between the two schools?
Well, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and, you know, I think we're good. Are we elite on defense? I don't know. I think we have a chance to be. We'll have to see. Obviously, we've got an elite offense coming to town, so that's going to be good on good, and we'll find out how good we are. On the opposite side of that, our offense is not in a great place. We've just been hammered by injury. We've got, you know, 4 out of our top 5 wide receivers are out. I don't know if we're going to get Nick Anderson back. Jaden Gibson is done for the season. Jaleel Farouk is done. I mean, probably for the season. Maybe you get him in November. But we've been decimated at wide receiver. And offensive line, you know, we've had 4 tackles drafted in the last 2 years. So when you lose that much talent, it's hard to replace it. So we've had to hit the transfer portal. And on top of that, we've been hammered by injury again. We've had, you know, we went out into the transfer portal and got a center from SMU, good player, Branson Hickman. He's been injured almost the whole time he's been here. He's hardly even practiced with the team. He played like 15 snaps in our opener, rolled an ankle, and I don't think he's going to be back this week, but I don't know for sure. Our right tackle is out. I mean, it's been a disaster. I mean, Garrett Hatchett was a starter for Washington last year. and we brought him in the transfer portal. He's done, season-ending injury, torn bicep. So it's been a disaster on the offensive line. And it, because of that, it's been a trickle down. It's really hard for our quarterback whenever he doesn't get great protection. You know, the clock has sped up in his head. The running game has struggled. Like all the things that you want to help a young quarterback, we haven't had. That doesn't mean that he's been perfect. He's made plenty of mistakes, but it has not been a great environment for a young quarterback to gain confidence and you know, gain some chemistry with the wideouts that he has. He's throwing to different guys every single week. We've handed off to different backs every single week, trying to figure out who our feature back is going to be. Frankly, we haven't been very good at running back. We've been mediocre. We don't make guys miss. We pretty much get what's there and not a whole lot more on top of that. So the offense has been, you know, it's been a work in progress. We showed a couple of signs this week of doing a couple of different things and trying to make things easier on Jackson Arnold. But, you know, until we get healthy, and I don't know that we ever will. I mean, it's hard to start the season banged up and ever expect to get healthy. So we may be fighting this thing all year.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be testing Arnold's patience, right? I know he ran around more, I think, in the Tulane game. It looked like he was more involved in the run game. I'm sure some of that was scramble, but it looked like there was some design stuff for him there. How is he kind of handled? Young quarterback, high expectations. How do you think he's handled just kind of what's happened to them offensively through the first three games? Has he pressed? Has he been pretty patient? Has he been sped up? Has he been, you know, has it been frustrating? I'm sure, but how's he managed that?
I personally think he was way too tentative the first two games. You know, he came in, he played in the BYU game for us, and then he started the bowl game, and I thought he played great in the bowl game. He threw for 350 yards. You know, we had several guys that, you know, on our offensive line that opted out. So we had, you know, backup offensive line in. But he, like I said, threw for 350, made some unbelievable plays. There were some turnovers, and not all of them were his fault. But throughout the entire offseason, all anyone talked about was the turnovers and the turnover problems. And he's got to take care of the football. And could Jackson Arnold get rid of the problems he has with turning the football over? And I think it just like went to his head. And I don't know if they overcoached him about it or what, but way too tentative in the first two games. He, in my opinion, needed to just cut it loose and go play. Your defense is good enough to where you can afford to make a mistake, especially now when you're trying to find out the capabilities of yourself and of the other players. So go cut it loose a little bit. I thought he did that Saturday against Tulane for the first time. He was more decisive. He pulled it down, made some nice runs. I thought he played his best game.
I want to ask you about Brent Venables' defense and how – I know it's really complicated, you know, and I know once you master it, there's a lot of levels to it and there's a lot of different things he can do out of it. We saw that when he was the defensive coordinator at Clemson. We've seen it as it's progressed in his time at Oklahoma. What do you like about them when you – because you have an understanding of what Josh Heupel's doing offensively, obviously, because you know the foundation and the basis of that. What do you like about what Venables' defense, without getting too deep in the weeds, can do in trying to defend Tennessee's offense?
The good thing about Venables' defense is they can do everything. Now – what all did they bring to the table? I'm not sure, but the thing that makes it so good is, you know, you got every front, you got every coverage, you got every blitz combination. It's just a matter of what they deploy on a given week. And this is the first year, it's his third year here. This is the first year that I feel comfortable with them being able to put in a comprehensive game plan and be able to execute it and not have a ton of mental mistakes. I mean, it's one thing to have a ton of blitzes and a ton of fronts and be able to stem and move and disguise. But if you're screwing up all the time, is it really worth it? Right now, I think that they've got the players, the leadership, the experience that they can handle that. So I think that's what really makes it tough for offenses. And, you know, there's a part of Heupel's offense that it doesn't really matter what you're in. They're going to go at their pace. It's a simple numbers game. It's a matchup game for them. So a lot of that stuff, I don't know how much it matters for Heupel.
Speaking of Josh Heupel, I believe you were a teammate with him in 2000, correct?
Yeah, okay. That's right.
So, yeah, you know about him. You know about his game. You know kind of how he is. How was he as a competitor? How was he as a teammate? And as a defender, you know, if you were tasked with trying to slow down an offense like Josh Heupel, you know, kind of what's going through your mind with the tempo and the splits and all that?
Yeah, I'll tell you, as a player, he's so different as a coach, like the personality. Okay. He was like this when he was at Oklahoma as the offensive coordinator. You ain't going to get much out of him.
Word salad, man.
Yeah. You're not going to get a whole lot out of him. He's not going to give you much emotion on anything. As a player, it's kind of different, man. He was like low key, the most confident dude you could imagine. You know, we found ourselves in a national championship hunt, like never really expected it. And you're in all these big games week after week. And previously, like, yeah, hey, maybe we go in and play for a conference championship. Like, who knows what the real expectations were. But then, like, out of nowhere, you find yourself where every series, every game, there's a national championship on the line. And he was just calm, cool, confident. Everyone on the team looked up to him. Looked up to him, just knew that he was going to go handle his business. And it was awesome. I love him. Great competitor, smart guy. He's tough. He's hard-nosed. He comes from his dad's a coach. So like he's been in the football world his entire life. So, I got a great deal of respect for Josh, man. And, I'm really proud of what he's done there. It's been awesome to watch.
From the fan base, what do you think the reception is going to be like when he goes there? Obviously, you know, was a great player there, coached there for 9 years, has left and done things since then. The reception, do you think, what are Oklahoma fans thinking about Josh Heupel in this matchup? I know it's been talked about all offseason.
Well, the obvious is everyone wants to win, right? And want to win big and would love to send them out of there with a big fat loss. But I don't think there's a person in the crowd that doesn't have a ton of respect, love for him as a player, really appreciate what he did as a player here, as a coach here. He's got a massive fan base here. I mean, that's just plain and simple. So I think everyone will be very welcoming and as respectful as you could possibly be for a game of this caliber.
Yeah, no doubt. Last question. I know I got to get you out of the door here. We really appreciate you stopping by. You mentioned the injuries, of course. You've mentioned a little bit about the offensive line. They've had a retool and everything. Strength of Tennessee is the defensive line in numbers as well. I mean, you got some players like James Pierce, but you got numbers. If you're coaching at that offensive line this week for Oklahoma, kind of what's the strategy there to try to slow down Tennessee's defensive front? Because I do think when you're kind of looking at, all right, who has the advantage here and here, that would certainly be an advantage Tennessee defensively going up against that offensive line, the new look offensive line.
It's by far it's of all the matchups on the field, it's going to be the biggest one-sided matchup that there is. There is no doubt about it. Traditionally what you do with that is you try and take the teeth of the defense away. You know, I don't know what we're going to do. We haven't done a whole lot of perimeter stuff, but you know, if I'm in that position, I'm probably trying to find a way to try and get outside of the defensive line instead of running right at them. I'm going to get the ball out of my quarterback's hands quickly. I'm going to try some screen stuff. I'm going to try some misdirection stuff. There's not a whole lot you can do. That's why everyone fights and scraps like hell for all of the defensive linemen that they can get. That's why every time there's a guy pops up in the NIL, the money starts flying because it's the biggest advantage. It's a line of scrimmage sport. And if you could dominate the line of scrimmage, then, you know, it makes everything else way easier and it makes everyone else look way better. So that's, I mean, we'll see. Like if we can find a way to somehow neutralize the defensive line from Tennessee, we can keep ourselves in the game. I think our defense can keep us in the game. Our special teams have been pretty good. We've played the field position battle pretty well. In my opinion, you never know in college football. Obviously, it's insane, but we don't want to be in a shootout. We need a low-scoring contest, and we need to be within a score in the fourth quarter to be able to have a chance to win the game.
Teddy, thanks so much for joining us, man. A lot of great information. Love the perspective from a player and, of course, from, you know, inside that fan base. I know you're around it every single day. Should be a good one this weekend, and we'll see what happens in this environment that's going to be top-notch in Norman.
It's going to be fun, guys. You guys coming?
Yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah, I think everyone's going to be here. It's going to be insane. It's going to be a lot of fun. I appreciate it, guys. We'll see you later.
All right, hey, thanks, Teddy.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for the insight.
Yeah, great stuff there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, pretty candid about where they are and the challenges that they have, and can they slow Tennessee down enough? Can they confuse Nico with the offense? I think that's an interesting element to this game, based on what he said, that they can be that complex in defensively, because that's a staple of Brent Venables. That's something he built at Clemson when he was the defensive coordinator, was just the complexity of trying to confuse a quarterback. Or does Josh Heupel spread neutralize some of that complexity and how you attack that? That'll be an interesting chess match there. But it's pretty clear Tennessee's defensive front's got to win. It's a disappointment, Eric, if Tennessee's defensive front doesn't win the line of scrimmage on Saturday.
Yep, no doubt. And really in any game, to be honest, not just going up against an offensive line that got some question marks. It should be that case every single game. So great stuff there from Danny Latham. We'll come back. Austin Price is going to join the show. We'll continue to recap Kent State. We'll ask Austin some recruiting questions, potential impact from a win like that. And we'll answer your questions. If you're watching right now, type in a question. We'll start and we'll answer here on the other side as you listen and watch here on the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night at VolQuest.com on the YouTube channel. Welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night right here on the VolQuest.com YouTube channel. I'm Eric Cain with Brent Hubbs, Tennessee, a 71-0 winner over Kent State. We just talked a little Oklahoma with former Sooner Teddy Lehman. Really good stuff there. Encourage you to go back and listen to it if you're just now tuning in. Awesome prize coming up here in a matter of moments. Brent, let's get to some questions here that I've starred throughout the show. First one's here from Michael. Want to know about Lance Hurd. Of course, Lance Hurd was a no-go yesterday, and a couple guys that were held back.
Yeah, if that were Oklahoma or a conference game or NC State, I think Lance Hurd's on the field playing. Tender ankle. We talked about it all week long leading up to the game, Eric. If there was a guy that was a little banged up or a little nicked up, then get him out of there or don't play him at all. And Lance Hurd fell into the category of don't play him at all. Make sure he's healthy and ready to go this week. He should be fine to go. That was just all precautionary because Tennessee didn't feel like that they needed him out there on a not 100% ankle to take a chance on aggravating it or making it worse going to Oklahoma. So that was just a precautionary move.
Nico for President wants to know about Braylon Staley. I missed a lot in that game towards the end because I was doing a couple of things. But Staley got in there in the second half, right, just like Matthews made his debut?
Yeah, Staley played. He just didn't have the impact that Mike Matthews had in terms of touches. But he got his first action, got on the field. I don't think had a ball targeted to him. But he did play and got his first action. How much do they play him moving forward? You know, we'll see what that looks like. I mean, Mike Matthews is going to play.
Yeah.
He's going to help this team, and he's clearly ahead of where Staley is right now. But they're high on Staley, and they did get him some work last night.
Balls for Live 28 says, just wondering, are you worried about Nico missing out some open receivers on Saturday with it being a hostile environment? I think the bigger question, Austin, as we welcome you onto the show, is how will Nico handle this environment? I mean, we just don't know because – he's never done it before. Doesn't mean he'll do poorly, but we can't say with confidence it'll be no problem for him. That's going to be one of the bigger storylines, is how Nico is going to handle what should be a really good environment on the road.
Yeah, you don't know because he's never done it. And that's the simplest way to put it. He could be fantastic on the road. He could be Casey Kloss, you know, the guy who's cool, calm, and collected, never rattled. I do think he's got a lot of Hendon Hooker in him. He's never too high, never too low. No matter what goes on, Nico just kind of rolls with it, both good and bad. The biggest thing is that, you know, he's going to make a mistake or two, you know, whether, you know, how big are the mistakes, you know, but he's also going to make a play or two. And again, how big are the plays? So, you know, I think you have to like where he's at, you know, four games into as a starter, three this year, of just kind of what he's been able to get accomplished. But he can lean on a really good ground game to help him. He's got plenty of weapons around him at receiver and tight end. And I would expect the full complement of offensive linemen to be ready to go Saturday. As y'all know, y'all were just talking about Lance Hurd.
Dylan wants to know, does Heupel want Nico to slide? He took a few good hits, easily slide to avoid that. I think, Brent, when you can avoid taking contact, you avoid taking contact, right?
Well, I mean, in that game last night, my whole thing when I was watching is, I'm like, just, you're outside the tackle box. Throw it to section Z. Yeah. Like, just get it out of bounds and live to play another day. It's not worth the 3 yards when you're up 60, 56 to nothing or whatever the case may be. Yeah, I mean, they want him to slide. They want him to be smart. They certainly don't want him to lead with a shoulder or lead with his head that way. I mean, they want him to get down and get out of bounds. And Austin, that's just another area of his game where he's going to, you know, have to grow. But, I mean, Hendon wasn't a slide guy. I mean, that's just, mm-hmm. you know, some guys, that's not what they do. And, you know, he does a pretty good job of not getting popped, but he ran way, way too much for my liking. But last night, unnecessary running. I know it just became playing football, right, Austin? It just kind of became playing backyard football for him. But at the same time, everybody in the stands was going, just take a knee, just throw it away. Don't worry about the yards. We're good.
Work on your passing stats. Come on now.
Yeah, some people just don't feel comfortable sliding. Not that they, and from a standpoint of like, they just feel like they look stupid doing it or can't do it. And so, like, you just try to, you know, just get down, whatever. Just roll around on the ground. Like, you know, stop, drop, and roll. Like, you know, like you're on fire. Like, whatever it takes. Like, just get down there. Because, I mean, you're right. I mean, he doesn't need to take unnecessary hits. You know, and again, I think it's hard to turn the competitor off. Like, you're trying to do a certain thing, and, you know, you end up, you know, like, I can do this, you know, and you end up taking a hit when you didn't need to. So, just got to keep him upright. And again, having your full complement of guys should help him do that.
Do you think this is a game, Sam brings this up, that you go into it with the intention of doing some quarterback design runs like Iowa last year, or would that be something that comes along once you get into the game?
Oh, I think they go in with it in mind, but I think it's situational. You know, can they, Austin, can, are they in a 3rd-and-5 situation and something's there and they feel really good about it, or a red zone situation where they want to run it. So I think they'll definitely go in with some design runs. How many of them will they call probably will be dictated by how the game's going and all of that. But I think they will go into it with the thought process of a handful of design runs if all the situations line up the right way.
Yeah, I mean, they did that against NC State, right? I mean, he had the one designed run for a touchdown of about 25 yards. I mean, they're going to do that periodically, and he'll obviously make a few plays with his legs when things break down. But, you know, I still think the goal is to try to get him hit the fewest amount of times as possible.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, but I think it's a little bit like that Hooker deal in 22. Like, the bigger the game, you know, the bigger the magnitude of the game. All right, we'll let him run here. But that's like last night. They didn't, like, none of that was desired last night. But in this game, maybe you got to run a little bit. And when you run the RPO game, that's just a part of it. I mean, it is a run-pass option. If everything's covered up, sometimes you tuck it and run a little bit. But I don't think they're going into this game with him planning to get 10, 12 carries or anything like that. I don't think it's a run design like that for Nico.
Michael wants to know, do you think they'll change up their road routines just a little bit in prep this week since they've struggled at times in road environments, not just last year, but go back to 2022? I mean, of course, yeah, you had South Carolina and you had Georgia that year and then a couple times last year.
Yeah, I don't think that they change up anything from a standpoint. I mean, like they've been working on crowd noise since spring.
Yeah.
You know, they're the only program in America that was sat out there on March 31st and you could hear just crowd noise blaring through the practice field. So, yeah, I mean, I think they'll work the hound out of that and, you know, because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, if Tennessee doesn't win this game, they're the road favorite. If they don't win this game, the narrative becomes that they can't go win on the road because of the hiccups, you know, they've had the last couple of years. So, you know what? Go ahead.
No, you're right. I mean, I'm with you, but I think it's an interesting narrative because, listen, they should not have lost to Florida a year ago. But correct. we also saw what this offense looks like when Cooper Mays is not at center. Okay, so to me, when I look at their road woes, that game last year without their center, and then whatever the South Carolina debacle was defensively, whatever that was, okay. And there's going to be 75 comments in here about Connor Stallions and wristbands by the South Carolina defenders. And then there's going to be 75 more comments about it was a boycott because Jeremy Banks wasn't on the trip. I don't know what happened, okay? But what I know is that one was bizarre. I mean, going to Athens, Georgia, and not winning on the road, I mean, is that a road woe? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
having a double-digit lead at halftime against Alabama to lose, going to a team that, you know, won the Cotton Bowl in Missouri, none of those losses hurt you. I agree with you. I'm just telling you what the narrative is.
Well, but I agree.
I just remember, sorry to butt in, I remember that 22 game at Georgia. It was so loud, and they struggled with so much pre-snap. Like,
They did.
And, I mean, going on the road in the SEC, you got to be able to deal with that, right?
Yeah. And that's a fair criticism. I mean, because it's not just that you lost. It's the fact that you had pre-snap penalties, and you got out of character. The moment was big.
Yeah.
And you hope that the guys on this team, there's a lot of guys on this team that were in that game in 22 in Athens, Georgia, and you hope they learned from it, Austin.
The moment was too big because Tennessee a year and a half prior was left for dead with nothing, right? And all of a sudden, you know, they kind of ascended freakishly fast for where they were. And it's kind of like you almost had too much success too quick. And so, like, you would think that it would be better this time around. Oklahoma's going to punch. They're going to, the crowd's going to punch. Oklahoma, the team is going to punch. How does Tennessee counterpunch? How does Tennessee handle the road? Like, if you go out and you win the first quarter and you've, you know, scored a couple of points and, you know, you take the crowd out of it, then all of a sudden it tames everything down. You go out and you turn it over on downs at the 50, or you fumble it or throw an interception on, you know, your side of the 50 and give Oklahoma a short field and the easy path to points, it's going to ratchet up and get louder and louder. So, you know, Tennessee's got to avoid early catastrophic mistakes in this one, because Oklahoma, while they've not been, you know, fantastic through the first three games, they're still plenty good enough to win the football game, and they are going to come out in their first SEC game plenty motivated.
Talk about that Georgia game in 22 and how there's a lot of guys still on the team from that. I mean, a couple of those guys, it was their first senior year back in 2022, and they're still here. I didn't want to get too far into this with Teddy, but, I mean, this is explanatory, and we can talk about it here. Donovan says, nobody likes getting fired, especially the school you want to natty as a player. Josh Heupel will downplay it. He 100% will downplay it. He has, and he will this week. But Brent Hubbs, he's going to want to stick it to him. He's going to want to score 100. But as you pointed out, the challenge this week is to not make it bigger than what it is, right?
I think this is a harder challenge for Josh Heupel than it is the players.
Yep.
But because I think there's
the players weren't born when he won. Well,
and there's a routine, and normal for them is staying in the routine, right? Josh Heupel is what they did last week to prepare for Kent State is exactly what they did to prepare for North Carolina State. They did not deviate from that in any way, shape, or form. I think the challenge for Josh Heupel is to make sure you're not any different this week, that you're loose or you're whatever it is, nobody senses anything different from you this week because you're going back there and you're playing this game. And it's human nature, Austin. Yeah, it's got personal feelings in it. It has to have. So I think the challenge is on Josh Heupel to be the normal, regular Josh, big game Josh Heupel, who's also the same as non-conference blowout game Josh Heupel, with crowd noise this week going on the road. Let's don't make anything bigger than what it is.
Sam wants to know, do you send pressure to try to get after Jackson Arnold, or do you trust your four? I think there's a healthy combination of both there, Austin.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Tim Banks likes to blitz. You know, if he can get home with just four, he'll be fine doing that. But he's going to dial up a pressure or two from the second level, whether it's a safety. I mean, we saw that, you know, Saturday with Jacoby Thomas. In previous years, we saw Wesley Walker come down and be somebody who, you know, blitzes the quarterback. You know, they go bring a linebacker or two. But yeah, I mean, Tennessee's going to be able to try to hit you from, you know, a myriad of different ways.
Now, I'd be curious to see if they play some games up front this week and run some stunts and twists. You got a young offensive line that's had a hard time. Can you confuse them a little bit like what Tennessee did at LSU in 22 with those young offensive tackles where we saw Josephs get his first sack in that game on a twist? Do they play a little more games up front with just four as well as some, mixing in some blitz stuff? Or do they just kind of pin their ears back and play it straight up? Now, you got to worry about the running game of Arnold, right? You got your rush lanes have got to be careful there. But do they play a little more games up front and try to confuse an offensive line that's trying to develop continuity, Eric?
I 100% would be playing games this week, trying to confuse those guys, get them demoralized. But you're exactly right. You've got to account for Jackson Arnold and his legs. And he took over the game against Tulane with his running ability. He's a leading rusher through three games for Oklahoma. I think he's very much like Nico. Like, he's not a true dual threat, but he's athletic and quick, and he's an athlete to go and make some things happen. So if you're playing games up front, your contain guys got to be there to do just that as contain. And you're taking your end, slotting them inside. That linebacker's got to come down, or the D-tack or whatever the case is. You got to know where Jackson Arnold is. But I'm doing anything I can to confuse them, to beat them, to demoralize them, and get them thinking as well. Because if they're up there thinking, okay, you know, when we were in third down this last time, this guy did this. I mean, that's bad news. Kevin wants to know about the safeties. Switching Brooks and Turrentine at times. Seems like Brooks was a strong safety during the interception at NC State. If so, you know, is this by design? I think with Jacoby Thomas, we talked about this in the press box, AP. I think he's coming in and he's playing both. Like, I think all three of those guys are kind of interchangeable. I don't think it's Thomas is the clear-cut backup for Brooks, because Thomas has played with Brooks and Turrentine throughout the first three games.
No, that's right. They've all, you know, three been on the field with, you know, different combinations through the first 3 weeks. And so, now the good news is for Tennessee is Jacoby Thomas got hit up for targeting in the first half, which means he doesn't miss any of this week's game. And, you know, it just also shows you how, you know, you're a targeting hit away against anybody from being really thin back there at that position. But, and, you know, to Tennessee's credit, they've been able to get some of those younger players, you know, Farouk, John Slaughter, plenty of run to where, like, it's like it wouldn't be like their first action, you know, if they had to go that far down the depth chart. But, you know, I do think they're pretty interchangeable.
Jars Park Tim wants to know, how big of a deal is recruiting that you now hold the SEC record for point margin through these games? Take the record out of it, but just there were some recruits on hand last night, and there was a lot of recruits watching what Tennessee did. Tennessee just continues to score points and not allow other teams to score points. Again, competition, but it's been a pretty neat showing. How far does that go in terms of recruiting the on-the-field product here early on?
I don't think it goes anywhere. I mean, I don't think a kid's choosing Tennessee because they set a record for points, you know, through the first 3 weeks, differential. I think they what they see is that Tennessee's going to throw it, they're going to run it, they're going to score points. However many points it is, I don't think the kids get real caught up in that. I think that, you know, Tennessee's known as a school that plays fast, puts up a lot of yards and a lot of points. You know, whether that's record setting or not, I don't think they really care about that. I think the biggest thing is everybody knows is Tennessee's an offensive school, which is now playing a little bit of defense, you know, with the way they've constructed the defense. And that's allowed Tennessee to continue to recruit well on the defensive side of the ball with Marion Dye and Jaden Harmon and those guys, and also be able to go out and get David Sanders and Travis Smith and some of those cool offensive playmakers.
This is the biggest game for Tennessee football since one of those 22 games.
Yeah. I mean, you went to Athens, Georgia, playing for a playoff spot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and a chance to win the division. So, yeah, I mean, it's the biggest game since then. Which is a credit to Josh Heupel, because before 22, that 22 game in Athens, Georgia, was the biggest game since
2016 Texas A&M.
Yeah, a long, long time ago. So, I would say I guess, and Sam Smith says 22, South Carolina, Tennessee was still.
Yes, I agree with this.
Yeah, they were still there. So you got, I would agree there that you throw that one in there as well.
It was a big game in terms of a road game, but you needed to win it. But I mean, gosh, I remember that line. Tennessee was a 17.5 point favorite. like it was different, but absolutely, you win that game, you're going to beat Vanderbilt. I mean, you're probably
you just throttled Missouri the week before on Senior Day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's going to be the game that a decade from now everybody's going to be going, what happened? Like, you know, does anybody know? Because that's the one that just doesn't make any sense. And again, I agree with the guy who said, you know, the Florida loss last year was a bad loss. It was a bad loss at Florida last year. Yeah. No doubt about that. But that South Carolina game is that's the one that makes no sense. Of all the games Josh Heupel has played, there's nothing you can say as to what caused that, or at least I can't, compared to some of the other games. You could put some, okay, Georgia was really good, hostile environment, they weren't ready. You didn't have your center at Florida. You went for it twice in your own territory at Alabama last year. You know, you can put some things out there, right, AP? But that South Carolina one is just, I got nothing.
It's a nib scratcher.
We got a huge week coming up this week and tons of coverage over VolQuest.com. Massive game for Tennessee on the road at Oklahoma to begin SEC play. We're going to cover it from just about every single angle. We'll have a ton of guests on the shows this week as well. We'll have written up stuff. But I do want to ask you guys this kind of out the door here from Donovan. You know, the answer or the question is Florida or Florida State worst situation? The answer is Florida, but those are two teams, State's not in the conference, but two teams that are in some pretty bad and sticky situations right now, the Gators and the Seminoles.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'll say Florida State just because they're a train wreck in their own conference because they're going to the court in their own conference. There's instability there. I mean, it is a little bit easier path because they're not in the SEC, but I mean, you're bad at the position right now currently that you just can't be bad at. And Florida, there's at least hope with DJ Lagway at quarterback. Even if it's not this year, even if you're saying, okay, they're not going to win many more games this year, there's still hope there for the future. And so I would go worst situation is Florida State. That's my opinion. But especially from the outside looking in, of knowing – I mean, everybody talks about the dysfunction with Florida, but they could easily hire the right president, hire the right AD, and then hire the right head coach and get aligned and flip it around. I mean – it's not that hard to do in the modern era where you can go to the portal and have success and flip it pretty quick.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I see where you're coming from. I would probably say it's easier to go find a quarterback than it is to go find a president, AD, and coach to align all that together. I think it's harder to get back in the SEC than it is the ACC because of the level of competition there. Both of them are a mess. And, you know, Florida State's, I think the bigger thing with Florida State that you're looking at is, yeah, the quarterback play is bad, but why are you bad on defense? They appear to have no chemistry, continuity, or anything in their locker room. And Florida made a bad clearly has made a bad coaching hire. I mean, like, yeah. Billy Napier just hasn't, it just doesn't work. I don't know that either one of them are a great situation to be in right now because Florida State doesn't have anybody to replace the quarterback with, apparently, AP. I mean, they don't have a guy waiting in the wings who's a young guy that everybody's gaga over, which is kind of surprising that you haven't – I mean, it makes you further impressed with what Josh Heupel and his staff have done assembling their roster.
Yep, 100% agree.
It is obviously very early in the week, and it just happened. Do you guys have an update on Sham?
No.
All right, we'll keep tabs as the week goes on. Tennessee – heading to Oklahoma to begin SEC play. We'll cover it all from every different angle right here at VolQuest.com. Do want to give thanks to Spivey King and Spivey LLP for being the presenting sponsor of the Rocky Top Rewind. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. That phone number is 423-245-4185. Again, 423-245-4185. Spivey King and Spivey LLP.com. For Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, I am Eric Kane. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us here every Sunday night during football season on the Rocky Top Rewind.